So, it's supposed to be a discussion, so I will present only what I think is the well the let me say that the regime that I will always be talking about is when QS is much bigger than a lambda QCD. So the original motivation for this our bottom up paper is not to is not first it was not not to make a quantitative prediction for RIC, where QS is of order 1 GeV or above 1 GeV. We want to ask the following question: as you increase the energy, whether you make thermalization more plausible or not. So this is just a qualitative question we want to understand. And at that time, it wasn't clear whether even at asymptotically high collision energy, you have enough time to equilibrate the system. The naive estimate one can do is the following. Let me take the initial condition that one expects from saturation, that is the density of the gluon that you produce at the beginning is QS 1 over alpha. This is proportional to 1 over alpha s, QS cubed divided by QS tau. Any question about that equation? And there is some factor of NC and 4 pi and famous C, but parametrically it's like this. And I asked the question, one can ask the question whether starting from such an initial condition, that is when the distribution function is a function of a momentum, has some shape with one characteristic scale, QS, and with the typical value 1 over alpha in the beginning and expand longitudinally. Can this system have enough time to equilibrate? Okay, if I do a very naive estimate, it's very naive. Mean tau mean free path, the mean free time is 1 over n sigma. Sigma is the cross section for large angle scattering. I need large angle scattering to substantially change the distribution function. And sigma is alpha squared over. C equal 1.
Yes, but V may not be 1.
Well, V, yes. Assume that all the gluon has to V equal 1, okay? V equals C equal 1. Okay, then what I have is, okay, so sigma is the mean free path for large angle scattering, that is scattering of particle where the momentum exchange is of the same order as the external momentum. So it's QS squared. Alpha s squared, because I have two vertices. You can see this is tau divided by alpha. In other words, during a time when the system expands the size of the system expand twice the number of collision that one particular particle suffer is alpha. It is, if I do this naive estimate, the thermalization is very, very slow.
Do you make any statement about energy density? I mean, clearly you don't, since you just have similarity size.
Okay.
Very crucial here is that, of course, you say that energy density divided by n is of the order of qs.
Yes.
Yes. But some of this number is, of course, extremely important for any quantitative analysis. If it is 100 or if it is 0.1, or it's a huge difference for thermalization. Since in thermalization, it has a very specific value. So you can be extremely far from kinetic thermalization or close to it.
In the beginning?
In the beginning.
Yes, in the beginning, yes.
Yeah. It's a little statement about that.
No, except that the E divided by N can be, in principle, be found from the numerical simulation that the type that Raju and Krasnit is doing.
Model,
it's a model, yeah. So it's a, yeah. So in their calculation, it's about 2 or 3, I think, more like 3 GeV per particle in the initial.
I just think that it's crucially important. You are going to discuss phenomenology here, and that number is crucially important for phenomenology.
Well, I will. I prefer to stick to this limit. So we are going to discuss phenomenology, but the thing that we can learn from doing theory alone, this type of calculation always refer to this limit.
So. This sketch of the initial distribution function, that's taken at time tau 0 is 1 over qs. Why that's time? Why do you take tau 0 1 over qs?
Okay. This is the minimal time when you can sensibly talk about particles.
So you talk about particles. This is not classical classical fields or anything?
It is both, because the occupation number is much bigger than 1. Mm-hmm. So if alpha is very small, I can assume this much bigger than 1. Then
well,
it's
a classical field, then why can't I start earlier than Q, N1 over, N have 0 equals 1 over
QS? I'm sorry?
Why can't I start earlier than 1 over, than times 1 over QS if I use classical fields?
Okay, so here's the tau, here is 0, and here is 1 over QS. You can do a classical field from here.
Yeah, that's
actually
what Krasnit said are doing, right?
Yes. You cannot do you cannot talk about particles when there is some place here that that I will talk about a little bit. You cannot sensibly talk about particle if the if you deal with time of order 1 over QS, because they are all off-shells at the beginning.
Why do I have to talk about particles when I discuss thermalization? Why do you only start at 1 over QS with your considerations?
Yes, so here,
you cannot have thermalization before.
Why can you have thermalization before? You cannot? Okay, so let me write here. Particles.
What the
classical field cannot have thermalization in the strict sense, because if you thermalize, this means that the occupation number must be of order 1. In the thermal ensemble. Mm-hmm. So it cannot thermalize by itself. Yeah.
So where does why are you drawing the classical field with description to go much longer than
1/2 QS?
Yeah. What sets this scale?
Set the scale. This is the place where the occupation number is of order 1. And this is the scale where the occupation number is of order 1/(α).
So you would say this?
So I would say it takes some time for the occupation number to drop by a factor of alpha s.
But I would not really be trusting the classical field description past the 1/(α) very far with that.
Why not?
Why not?
You need just f p much bigger than 1. So
some part of the spectrum is classical field. Some part of the spectrum is particle.
Yeah, but you're creating particles during this period. So when it falls down below 1/(α), you know, if it's factor 1/10 of alpha s. Then I would start to think that the part, well, that's what you have drawn.
Yes.
That you have to include the particles there.
No.
But if I use pure classical fields, then
they are both. They would be both valid.
Right, but in Krasnitz et al., they would have just classical fields without any.
Up to 1/2 QS. Now, it's correct to say that these are two equivalent distributions.
Yes.
You should go on, but I'm not at all, I don't believe the classical field description. Far beyond 1/2 QS.
Far over FP of order 1/(α). You said if FP is, say, 0.1/(α),
yeah,
alpha is still much smaller than 1. I still believe that the only condition you have is FP much bigger than 1. Why you have problem with that?
That means that particles have to have some kind of like 10% effect.
Which particle? The particle is not 10% effect. Its effect is 1/FP effect.
What he's saying is
depends on the energy. Depends on which energy.
You're thinking of classical fields and particles, which is precisely not what he's saying.
No, classical fields. I'm saying classical fields alone should not be accurate.
What he's saying is that the classical field description and the particle description are equivalent in that regime.
Up to 1/FP. Up to 1 inverse of it.
Can you say when that other line starts? Are you going to tell us when the particle line starts?
Well, this start.
What defines
that? It start the particle description needs two ingredients to be valid. First of all, the particle must be on shell so that the momentum of the particle must be big compared to the 1/tau. You have only time interval tau, and all the particles are off shell. And so that requires
classical particle.
So what? The
yeah.
So this must start not right at 1/QS, but soon after 1/QS.
When you have a thermalized system, particles are never on shell.
Yes, so but the
this condition would exclude thermalization.
No. If you have a thermalized system, let's talk about non-expanding thermalized system. If it is weakly coupled, this condition is valid. Typical energy is T. And the mean free path is this is thermalized system. This is of order T, and this is of order G to the fourth log over G T.
Yeah, but I mean, this is never going to work in heavy ion conditions. In between conditions, I have a long time, I'm not going to make it. So the only hope of heavy ion conditions to actually thermalize is that it's not weak.
In the heavy ion collision at the available energy, I mean, at the Rick energy, or in the heavy ion at all.
Just because but Son's point is that he's described thermalization quantitatively if you have a heavy ion collision which is so bloody energetic that QS is enormous, alpha at QS is very small.
So it's weakly coupled. Alpha QS is small. He claims you've got thermalization.
Well, his question is, even if the system is very, very weakly coupled,
can
I get thermalization if I go to sufficiently high condition energy?
Yes, high QS.
This is perhaps not the question that we are interested on in at this point, but that's interested. It's a question for the future. Is that what you're saying?
It's a question that could be useful qualitatively if I want to see the trend, what happened if I increase the energy of the collision, whether the system will be less and less thermalized or more thermalized.
Can you give us a ballpark figure for what you're taking for QS?
But the Drake energy. Yes, but as you know from QCD, the onset of hard QCD is not 200 MeV. The onset of perturbative QCD is a little bit far away. So there could be a numerically number here that you require QS to be bigger than say 5 lambda QCD.
Which really is alpha S at QS.
E to the power.
I would just say, even in principle, even when you go to this asymptotically large regime, there has to be a crossover region where neither classical particles nor classical fields are strictly speaking correct, because the particles are not on shell and the fields are not classical, they are fluctuating. So there has to be a transition zone between the two that you have written, where it's basically quantum field theory that you have to do. And you are just
I disagree. I think there is a regime, well, it's completely opposite to what you said. There is a regime where both apply.
That you have to show me. I don't believe this.
That class from classical field, you can derive Boltzmann equation?
No. That there is a region in which you mean by Boltzmann equation you mean on shell particles.
Yeah. This will be described by some Boltzmann equation.
But that's completely because you're completely starting out as classical theory.
And this is classical field. The mu phi square equal.
Is it either collision dominated, Blasov dominated, or is it right in the middle?
Still pure classical.
Boltzmann
equation
is a quantum. There are well-defined plasmas that are being studied every day, which are in the middle.
Yeah, gluons. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, where are no quantum effects at all.
The Boltzmann equation of the.
That are summarized.
It's not just classical Boltzmann.
Boltzmann equation for classical fields.
Let's have one discussion at a time.
I'm going to referee and let Son answer the question.
Which question? I think you should
go on and just state clearly what are the regimes for each of what you mean by these phrases of particles and fields and what are the requirements. So you have already
the requirement
said classical
of the
fields. You want FP to be much much greater than one, and only this.
And only this. Yeah.
Okay. Now, for particles, what are you saying? What's the condition?
The condition that they are on shell, and the mean free path is small, is large compared to the inverse Compton wavelength.
Okay. And now you are going to say, or have you said that there's a region where both of these conditions are satisfied?
Yeah. Okay. So let's take
Let's go to that point.
Okay, so
So that 1 over tau is the tau of the whole plasma, and that's the mean free path.
This is the lifetime. This is the time from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that is the.
But the other.
Yes, so at least I need to have enough time. My system at least have to. The expansion at least has to occur. So. Slowly, that the particle can be considered to be on shell.
Except for the on shellness, what do you mean by classical? You don't mean classical distribution function, do you? I mean,
classical fields in this
for the particles.
I mean, you have very good, you have very good.
No, 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 these are particles. Why classical particles?
They're not classical particles.
Right.
They are quantum particles.
Right. Yeah. They have quantum distribution.
Yeah, they have quantum distribution.
But they're on shell.
They're on shell.
So
dFP over dt
they have short
is equal. Let me write down. Maybe Emil will be more sympathetic.
I think the exact statement is solution of quantum Boltzmann equation.
Yes.
The Boltzmann equation with quantum collision terms.
Yeah.
That,
that's quantum equation.
Well, that's the I would call it a classical equation, just slightly different distribution. Yeah, okay, I understand.
Yeah, but now let me say some word about classicality. Classicality means that in this statistical factor is replaced by only term with F cube term. And they throw away the F squared term.
Classicality in the sense of
field classicality.
Well,
it's not Boltzmann particles, yeah. But it's.
I think Emil was.
No.
When he said particles, he really meant Boltzmann particles. And
F is small.
You cannot go to that reading. F is small.
F is small.
Right. If it's bigger,
if it's large, we have classical fields again. I don't understand.
No, it's
you have more.
No. If F is big, you don't get this equation in the first place.
Well, that's precisely the point. He's describing, he's in a regime where F is much bigger than 1, and you can describe that regime either with classical field theory or with this Boltzmann equation.
Okay, how can you make scattering of on-shell
It makes sense. At least in phi 4 theory, I can derive the Boltzmann equation with the F cube term and derive this from the classical equation of motion.
Why don't you put a Blasov term on the left-hand side?
And these are not incoherent classical particles of the kind that the Boltzmann equation is supposed to describe. So you can write an equation like this.
No.
We are really describing classical fields.
This is classical field in with the random phases.
It's a randomness assumption.
With the random phases. So you can think about that as the following. You have a classical field, and you do a Fourier transform.
Yeah, sure, you can define this distribution that way.
Yeah, and if the different modes interact sufficiently weakly with each other, you will see, you can define the distribution function.
Okay, so I think it's just language. I would not call this particles. If you go to that limit, I think it's misleading to call them particles because the classical Boltzmann equation describes particles with incoherent scatterings, not with large, to be very crude, think about just the ordinary Bose-Einstein distribution, which looks like this. When you're talking about classical particles, you're talking about hard particles scattering here.
Uh-huh.
When you're talking about classical fields, you're talking about large occupations, the numbers there.
Yeah,
So it's the crossover region, which is quantum.
No. No, I think it's just I agree it's a linguistic problem, but it's useful to use the language that you have particle whenever you can define the distribution function and the distribution function changes slowly.
But
helium condensate, helium 4 is the collection of particles, after all. They are in the quantum state. Well, so.
Yeah, but then I describe it by a mean field, which is,
if you prefer, you can also describe by classical field.
Okay,
so now, so what?
He hasn't even finished his first sentence yet. I wanted to finish his first sentence before we interrupt again.
I already forgot what is the first sentence about.
But,
No. Now, now what I want to discuss is the okay. So I want to discuss what now? Okay. I want to discuss the when the classical field description terminate. So there is a place I claim that the classical field description cannot go beyond. That is the place where the occupation number drop below one. Okay, so the result is, let me write it here, alpha minus 3/2 compared to the initial time. So at small alpha, you have a long time to evolve the system classically, and also using particle distribution, one can also find the evolution. But okay, so now let's try to obtain.
You just said there was a naive argument. You were just finishing saying there was a naive argument that I would never thermalize. That's that was the first sentence I was referring to.
Yeah, but this is the here the naive argument. One of the parts that where it is naive is that the evolution the estimation for the mean free path doesn't take into account the fact that the occupation number is large. Okay. In fact, if the occupation number is large, there is a factor of f here. Let me write it as 1 over f, 1 plus f, so that it has the correct behavior at small f.
What's n?
What is n?
Yeah.
N equal integral over d3p, fp.
N is against the scatterers, and 1 plus f is for the test particle, is what I'm saying. I mean, you look at the lifetime of the particle with quantum with distribution f, and it scatters the particle with distribution n, with density n. But it's not the test particle, it's any of the particle with occupation number f.
But they're on the same.
They're the same.
So you're saying in the small f limit, I can do all that?
Yeah. But I want to talk about the formula in the
order. He's in a large f limit.
Yeah. So I am in the large f limit. And also it is not.
Can I ask one question before you?
Yeah.
So you've already finished your piece, that the naive argument that it doesn't thermalize, just the fact that the tau mean free path goes like tau.
Is goes like right? Tau and always bigger than tau.
It's always bigger than tau. It's the 1 over alpha, that's the point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it basically says that in the time tau, you have on average no scatter.
Right, okay.
Alpha is small.
Yeah, small number of scattering.
Alpha, so that's again, that's just order of alpha. The T mean free path is just order of tau. Tau and mean free path is about the same.
If F is 1 over alpha?
Right. It still doesn't go.
No. If F is at the very beginning, so that means that at the very beginning, when tau is of order 1 over QS, this time scale and this time scale are of the same order. Okay?
Mm-hmm. That means you have 100% corrections to equilibrium.
100% correction to Boltzmann equation.
100% corrections
to Boltzmann equation.
Right. Yeah.
0% correction to Raju and Krasnitz, because they are doing well. Alpha correction to classical field, because it's a regime where the classical field is really working.
So you're saying it doesn't completely thermalize?
No, there's been no thermalization so far.
No. It means that you have, during this time, you have one collision.
Yes, there's no thermalization.
One collision. But in order to change that from 1 over alpha to 1, you need more than one collision. One collision doesn't change.
One collision won't do thermalization.
No.
That's fine.
Okay. But now, actually, we have to be more specific about the, about soft about collision, about almost collinear collisions. So let me draw this diagram. The sigma, the total cross section for Coulomb scattering is divergent quadratically. And most of the collisions have small angle scattering. In the plasma, the exchange momentum is cut off by the device screening. Okay. So most of the collisions are small angle collision with momentum exchange of the order of the device screening.
You don't have a plasma yet.
You mean you asked the meaning of what is?
What is that?
What is MD? MD has to be determined self-consistently from the distribution function. Okay.
So
if you have, it's not exactly dielectric constant. It's the response of a system on external electric field, point line electric field. Okay.
How rapidly charge fluctuations are spring in the system?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is to estimate this time. Do you have how much time? Is now?
Yeah. You haven't used any time yet. Well, I don't know. Keep going. You go wherever you want.
Yeah, I just afraid we probably don't have enough time for thermalization, but we can go at least to.
Well, I would describe it as follows. You said you would talk for half an hour. I think you've talked for 10 minutes so far.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm trying to answer on the question. I want to compute the time evolution of the typical FP, which is the density of particle divided by the transverse phase space multiplied to the longitudinal phase space. Right, and check at which time this quantity drops below 1. The PZ is much less than QS. One can physically think why it should be true. If there is no collision, okay, so let me state it a little bit. So I assume boost invariance so that this is T and this is the Z, everything depends on tau, which is square root of T square minus Z square. And I will sit in the center of the collision. I will sit here. Now, as I sit in this box, what I see, if there is no collision, that particle with some PZ momenta will start flying away from my box, okay? Because of the boost invariance, particle here will move to the right, particle here will move to the left, and if I wait long enough, all the particle inside my box have the momentum close to zero. Right?
Yeah, but the keyword is if you wait long enough.
If there is no collision, also. Otherwise, the particle can obtain the PZ by scattering. Okay, and that will be so. If no collision, PZ is of order QS divided by QS 1/tau. Let me write 1/tau. You can see that in the following way. The density decreases like 1/tau. If there is no collision, the occupation number shouldn't change at all. That means that the phase space should shrink as 1/tau.
Mm-hmm.
to keep the occupation number unchanged. But as I said, there are collisions between the particle, and the effect of the collision will increase Pz and decrease Fp.
Actually, Pz decreases by expansion, but because of collisions, it decreases more slowly than one over
r. Yes. 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 It decreases slower than 1 over tau.
It still decreases.
It's still decreasing. Mm-hmm. Now, Pz squared, let me write an equation for d over d tau of Pz square of one particle. So if one particle moves, this is a picture I want to draw, it moves almost on the plane because the Pz is small, it's almost on the transverse plane, but it can also scatter off other particle and obtain a small amount of momentum in the z direction, which is this direction. So assume the scattering are random, d over d tau of Pz squared is equal to the amount of energy, the amount of exchange momentum during each of the collision, which is md squared, collision.
That's the small angle cutoff.
This is the small angle cutoff, and the most frequent momentum exchange multiplied to the rate of collision. Taking into account the Boltzmann factor, and sigma is equal to alpha squared over md squared. Okay, so md cancel. Yes, so sigma is alpha squared because I have two vertices. Okay, so now QS 1 over alpha. Let me write this QS over QS tau multiplied to alpha squared. From here, and F is QS, F is N divided by QS square PZ. So I have a self-consistent equation. Self-consistent equation for this is the change of the momentum of one particular particle during 1 unit of time, Pz square, change of Pz square, due to collision. So let's get rid of all this alpha. So alpha n divided by tau 1 over Pz. Mm-hmm. And now, if you do, you write the Boltzmann equation in the tau and rapidity coordinate, you will see there is another contribution, which in the absence of collision will decrease the Pz squared. In the absence of collision, as I have said, the Pz squared should decrease. It's like 1 over tau. Okay. So this is the term you get without collision, and this is the effect of the collision.
Can you
didn't you say before that P0 is less than the tau?
Yes, if there is no such term, then Pz square, like 1 over tau square, right, this is 2. Yeah, it's Pz square like 1 over tau square, and this is 2, factor of 2 there. Okay. Now, let me write the answer, Pz square. Goes Pz goes like Qs divided by Qs tau to the power 1/3. If you balance this term with this term, not paying attention to the left hand side, then you will see that Pz should decrease is like, then if you balance these two terms, Pz is of order alpha n to the power 1/3. And this is tau 1/3. The left hand side is small compared to both terms in the right hand side, because it is, the left hand side is 1 over tau to the power of 5 over 3.
So that's the solution.
Okay, so that is the solution, which means that, again, it's decreasing, but decreasing much slower than 1 over tau. And Fp then decreases like 1 over tau to the 2/3.
And that gives you your 3/2 up there.
That would give me a 3/2 up there.
Can I ask here, since some space one discussed here, that particle description is not valid in this domain. Now you're all the time discussing particles here.
Particle is valid after 1 over QS here. So I'm describing the evolution here from this point when the...
If it has started, you don't have this dotted one. It really starts from the beginning. But you just said that it's not valid, or something that particle description is not valid.
Well, here it received a correction of order 1, because everything is of the same order. So the Boltzmann equation has the correction of order 1, but it becomes more and more precise as you, more and more accurate as you go further and further. Depending on the level of your accuracy, you can this trans.
So you're still in a domain where Fp is much greater than 1.
Yeah.
It is much less than initially.
Yes.
I see. So what happens during this first period?
During this first period, then picturally, the system is, the distribution function in momentum space is a pancake where the size of this pancake shrinks as 1 over tau to the 1/3. And not much things happen in the transverse direction. You can estimate how much the transverse energy each of the particle obtained by this, and it's of the same order as Pz. So the distribution function, as seen in two dimension, doesn't suffer much change late in the evolution.
So this is what the Raju and Alex call the free streaming. Because they only look at the, Roger and Alex are only looking at the
classical
two-dimensional
They only have free stream. They never have anything else but free stream.
No, they have something in the beginning happening. That the tau of order QS.
From nothing. There's, in the beginning, there's nothing.
It's nothing, but during your time of order QS, there is something happening of order QS.
Then the system is created.
Yeah. So the system is created here, and then later it's the distribution function is approaches. This is later in later time, and this is FP as a function of P. And the change, all the change in later time are concentrated in the infrared. So nothing much happened for tau of order QS.
Why was the initial longitudinal moment without QS? Because the QS was
a transfer scale. QS was at the beginning the transfer scale. I assume, assuming that there is some well, if you don't have QS at the beginning, it will be generated.
So what does the system look like at time alpha minus 3 halves?
It is a pancake with this side, root alpha smaller than that side in momentum space.
At that time, FP is 1.
At that time, FP is 1.
It's not that.
It's, at this time, FP is 1. And it's not thermal.
It's still not, yeah, okay.
Okay, now, now at this time, the what's it called? There's some, another interesting interval that,
how much ET is lost in this process?
How much ET is lost?
So analogous equation for the transverse momentum.
Compared to when?
You start initially with QS as your typical PP, right? You have a very small PC, but you have a huge ET. Right?
Here, right?
At early times. As you start scattering and things diffuse out, part of what's happening is, in hydrodynamic terms, is work. And you're doing partial work because you're not in equilibrium, so you're doing transport amount of work longitudinally to try to decrease the ET. So, I mean, the transverse energy is another observable that you have to constrain. And you want to get rid of your initial high ET by a lot of work going down the beam pipe, the longitudinal expansion. So in this calculation, what is the loss of total ET per unit rapidity during this period?
The Z momentum, the typical PZ momentum is the thing that determines the loss of ET. The typical ET over. So let me write for the energy density then. So the energy density, the epsilon over the tau is epsilon over tau 1 plus typical PZ for QS. If there is no PZ, then there is no work done by the system. If PZ square, let me write this way, P square, full P square. If the system is isotropic, then this ratio is 1/3. And you find that energy density decreases like 1 over T to 4/3. And then, because the particle number is conserved, the ET decreases like 1/3. So effectively, the typical ET is of order.
Euclidean quote.
Euclidean quote 1/tau.
Z square, because everything here depend on tau, so it's in quote.
You can actually solve the differential equation because tau epsilon is ET times
pi. Yeah, that's how it's written because you've got PZ squared over PZ squared.
Well, I suppose you went ahead and tried to solve that and say that DET, so you put the ones together, the epsilon over E.
It's negligible. No, it's negligible in parametrically. Parametrically dealing the first time.
And I want to come back to the ET evolution. So we start with an ET, which is basically QS.
Yeah, the ET you start from here, but there's not.
ET is conserved in their whole first process. ET doesn't change at all. It's not going down at all practically because of your slow. It takes you a
little long. ET at the beginnings could change a little bit. But then it's flattened out. In this picture here, you created more and more soft particles.
Just the direction eventually when you get there is that at the end of the day, ET per particle is 800 MeV, some number which is very similar to
three times the temperature.
The freeze out temperature.
Yeah.
You started out with an ET, which is QS.
Uh-huh.
Now, it may be the
maybe three QS, actually, if I believe what.
Yeah, okay. So it's something huge. And KO has something huge as well. Mm-hmm. He needs all the work that he can get in hydro. Factor of three is lost on the way out due to longitudinal expansion.
Mm-hmm.
By having this period, this rather long period of no activity, which is a natural consequence of finite cross sections.
You say it's a waste of time?
No, it's not. It is a waste of time to do work to get rid of your initial.
I don't get rid of work during that time.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, what I'd like to see is how do you actually match on to the low ET measured at the end?
Yeah.
If you spend such an enormous amount of time doing nothing.
Well, whether it's enormous is dependent on the.
Well, we agreed alpha is 10 to the minus
20th. On the QS, and the QS and alpha. What happened subsequently is the following. Let me just describe what happened subsequently. You have this pancake, which is still like this, but what you do is during a time between 5 half, 3 half, tau alpha minus 5 half over QS, is that you start creating soft particles. So let me draw it by a different color.
This diagram is a diagram in momentum space?
This is a diagram in momentum space where this is the perp direction and this is Z direction. And at the beginning.
And then those orange guys slow the other guys down by energy low.
Yes. And at the time of order alpha, after alpha 5 half, all the this QS scale gluons are eaten by the. Like this guy. This is when tau is bigger than this time scale. And afterward, you have the radius become smaller because the system expand, but it's already thermalized, so the temperature should decrease and the size in momentum space becomes smaller. So there are two effects. One is the jump around alpha minus 5 half, that all the particle change the momentum by an amount of order, parametrically of order alpha to fifth.
So thermalization is occurring between your first picture and your second picture.
Yes.
The first picture is the picture at alpha to the minus 3 halves.
There is a very short period of time that I didn't mention that this is actually alpha
academic, it's a, well, we are doing very, very small alpha then. Alpha minus 13/5 is the place where all this particle has lost energy. Mm-hmm. So this thing. Okay, there is something happening here, but after this time, the all the soft particle has.
Right. So going from those two pictures, for ET has changed a lot there.
ET is jumped by a factor of alpha 2/5.
So ET has gone down because ET.
Yes, ET has gone down. For these, yeah. They lost energy.
Miklos's work.
No, it's done here and here also.
I don't know if it's enough,
but there is a freeze out also. So. Yes. So the temperature.
Not freeze out in a non-logical sense.
No, this is a freeze out phenomenologically when you observe your particle.
Well, but then you have to stop talking about gluons and start talking about hadrons.
Yes, but. But between these two things, when the system has already thermalized, the question of how thermodynamically the system becomes from change from gluon to hadrons can be answered. Just the conservation of entropy is the. So if I know the equation of state from the lattice, and if this is really above TC, then the whole thing. In principle, can be followed, at least in the thermodynamic sense, from here to here.
So where is hydro valid? Hydro is certainly valid in that last stage.
It's certainly valid here. Now, there is a question whether.
Wait. Is it really an ideal hydro really valid in that region? The sigma is not that big anymore.
So hydro requires the mean free path to be small.
Is this small?
Compared to what?
Compared to
tau.
By that time, what happens to the, so your transverse radius is still infinite? Is that what you're thinking about as well?
Yes. I mean, by the size of the.
You run out of real estate on the side.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes, so that I need small enough QS. To not run out of space, -1.
So, at the beginning, you were worried about the academic question of suppose in a very high energy collision when alpha is small, maybe everything will fly apart before it thermalizes.
Before it thermalizes.
And now you've given the answer to in that very high energy situation where alpha is very small.
Mm-hmm.
No, things actually do thermalize, and they thermalize by this sequence of steps.
Yes.
So I guess the question which people are trying to ask at the beginning, which now seems to be the right time to ask it, is what of all of this sequence might be valid? You know, what lesson do you think we should abstract from this for even LHC collisions, even part Rick collisions? You know, when alpha is not 10 to the minus whatever. You know, what is the lesson you think we should take
lessons
from this?
In
yeah, you know, what are the lessons that we should discuss whether we believe you?
Tough question.
I guess I will.
How do you mean experimentally?
For the case when alpha really is small, let's assume you've done the calculation correctly.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what is your
calculation better? Is the a complement. It's an estimate.
let's assume you've done the estimate correctly.
Yeah.
But so what do you think is generalizable from this?
Can one generalize?
Generalizable to real circumstances, with when alpha, you know, to real experiments.
Oh, but it's theoretic data, theoretically well.
What's that?
In the paper, they fit Rick data, theoretically well.
Well, but fitting one. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. The
fitting.
Data.
The fitting.
Before you do that.
Yeah.
I'd like to return to this epsilon versus tau. So you're saying this goes, yeah, there's a minus sign in front of the right hand side, right? So this means that it goes like 1 over tau as long as there is no PZ, and it goes faster than 1 over tau
when PZ
develops. Yeah?
Yes.
And PZ develops already in the classical field domain. You know?
Pz is small in the field theory.
G, some other ratio, it's 1 plus G. And they say that G is small. Even G, not only.
Yes, in the classical domain, at the size in the Pz direction is root alpha or G compared to the.
Okay, so there is something of order G developing before the FP goes below unity. Why don't I see any of that stuff in Rasmus and in Gutenberg? They have epsilon tau is constant. But they have.
Yeah,
why?
I think the F is equal zero because they put it in by hand.
Yes, by definition.
No, I mean, they have in the initial condition that P is equal zero. And then they use the classical equations and solve them. And what he is telling us is that the classical field description is equivalent to the particle description between one of two.
So what I would say, and maybe Roger would disagree if you were here, is that they made a very brutal simplifying assumption, which is not just that. They didn't just assume that Pz was small. They assumed that you had, as a function of in the z direction, the rapidity direction, they assumed that at any given point in the transverse plane, the color was everywhere the same along a line of constant tau. And so they assumed boost invariance, not just of things like Pz, but they assumed boost invariance of the color orientation. No randomness of the color field as a function of rapidity. I mean, that means that their calculation became truly two-dimensional, which is why they were able to do the calculation. That's why they were able to do the calculation. But I think that's an assumption,
Well, they claim it's not an assumption. They claim it's forced on them because of the delta function nucleus and the matching condition of the fields.
The assumption is at that stage. And when they assume that form, then, of course, it's fixed.
So where does he avoid that? What is implicit in your considerations that?
Implicitly, I assume some randomness.
You're right. What he starts with, you look at the expression for Pz, it seems to become QS at the origin, while in the random state was zero at the origin. That's the difference.
Okay, so you say that at time
I assume all over QS
Pz is as big as Pt.
Yes, that is forced. I think that is forced to you by the uncertainty principle. If you assume that soon after 1 over QS, you have some sort of randomness in the classical field, or you can start describing the particles picture. You cannot have QS much less than 1 over tau by uncertainty principle.
So the McLaren-Venugopalan matching condition violates the uncertainty relation.
Yeah, apparently
it does. No, at origin tau equals 0, this is infinite.
Yeah.
For them it is infinite.
What is it?
Longitudinal scale at very small tau is 1 over tau.
They have zero longitudinal momentum.
Not completely exactly. They have complete boost invariance of the classical field configuration by configuration in the ensemble along the rapidity axis.
Yeah. That's right. Which is like Pz equals zero.
So it's perfectly ordered in the z dimension.
Right.
In the.
That means it violates the uncertainty relation.
Yeah.
Well, it's classical field. No uncertainty relation.
But that's important. Yeah? Well, because that's
Pz. Pz is a Pz momentum of a power, because that's not a field configuration.
Well, when you analyze the configuration, you analyze it, you have only
But it's a very different physical picture. I don't know, that's more wrong than assuming that it's completely random.
That's the origin.
That origin, yeah. But we can identify the origin.
And where they are doing something different.
I just want to.
The longitudinal scale is 1 over tau. 1 over tau.
That's what they are using. That's what they are using.
One of our files has nothing to do with two dimensions. The occupation number one of our files is two dimensional occupation number.
We're not talking about one of our files.
Sorry?
We're not talking about one of our files.
That's related. The initial distribution, if you want to say that we start with the initial distribution with large occupation number, which is classical, whatever, it's a two dimensional problem. It's not that in the problem, period.
Right, but that's assuming that Pz equals zero, which is what Raju and Alex assume.
It's not the same. It's an integral over all of that minus, over all that. It's a two-dimensional field problem. So if you're going to make all these arguments, all that matter, but that is a transverse plane. You don't have 1 over alpha s at your event. You have 1 over alpha s after you integrate everything in one plane.
No, Ivo, we're just saying something much simpler than that. All we're saying is that if you just look at Raju and Alex's field configurations.
It's two-dimensional from the beginning.
And that means Pz equals zero.
He has also has two dimensions because he's not 1 over alpha s here. That's two dimensional.
Why?
The distribution is almost the 1 over alpha s comes by integrating
just
over the other.
Just look on the board.
Yes.
As you yourself said, Pz, Poisson's Pz at time tau 1 over qs, Pz is qs.
Yeah, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
means,
so
this means
integral,
the,
you want to,
means the third dimension exists, and this invalidates the starting point. The starting point for two dimensions. Fp now 1 over alpha s is only by the transverse plane. Because that's the total occupation, effective occupation number in the transverse plane, where you have some up over everything in the longitudinal profile of the hadron. At each given vet, there's one gluon. But the hadron has a 1 over alpha s which will extend. So if you project that in the transverse plane, you get 1 over alpha s. If not, you don't get. There is no over-occupation factor at that.
But he's talking about after the collision. You were just describing before the collision. When you're talking about projecting a wave function, that's
sure. But that's what at the beginning there is no PZ. But you have to integrate it.
But this is after the collision.
I don't understand how does it match with that what you're saying.
Okay, so if I integrate I integrate FP on PZ, and FP is of order 1 over tau 3/2. That is a constant, and it's always 1 over alpha. This the whole thing shrink in the PZ direction, but from the point of view of two-dimensional distribution function, nothing much happened.
Right. But you
and me are talking about two different, very different things.
No, the initial condition in PZ, is the delta of PZ, effectively. Because to start, you just start with a two-dimensional field. That's all you have. You don't have anything else. But this two-dimensional is physically coming from integrating over all the directions. But you want to simulate that by something which is very localized in Z. So you say, okay, it's like having a distribution with PZ equal 0 and over a transfer distribution 1 over alpha S. And that's the initial condition, delta of PZ. The initial F, FP is 1 over alpha s, delta of pz. That's a three-dimensional distribution.
No, delta of z. Why is delta of pz?
Delta of pz.
Delta of z.
In momentum space. It's constant, or the same.
Yeah, the initial wave function is delta of z, not delta of pz.
That depends. What means now it's a Lorentz contraction. That's
yeah.
I don't assume it's the same. Because you see, you have, strictly speaking, physically, you have a constant occupation number in longitudinal direction within a longitudinal extent 1 over alpha s. But you simulate that.
That's also initial
collision. Yeah, that's
initial collision.
But you don't work with really that. You work with a projected dimensional distribution.
Sure, but I think that what Raju and Alex
assume is.
I mean, there's a difference between before the collision and after the collision. But before the collision, you have McLaurin, then a Gopalan, Weizsäcker, Williams, all those good words. But after the collision, where's the hyperbola? There's a hyperbola.
Yeah.
There's no reason why at this point in space-time and this point in space-time, the color of the field should be the same. But it's assumed in McLaurin, not McLaurin, it's assumed in Raju and Alex's solution.
Well, it's a consequence of the ansatz of infinite energy because the color configuration is completely frozen at infinite energy, and therefore it doesn't matter where you sit on the hyperbola, you see always the same color configuration.
That's complete
crap.
It's very important to differentiate. Longitudinally, you have random charges
Because you're you have to integrate the all the distribution that was the source of your mid rapidity guys, and which are a random set of charges that are going up all the way to the beam rapidity.
Yeah.
I mean, they evolved from the valence quark, which fragmented.
Right.
All these hard guys with random colors all the way down to mid rapidity, and so if you go 1 inch further, you'll be in a new environment.
One rapidity further, or one, how many rapidity do you have to go for that?
No, that's, I mean, that's why the equation of motion that that Raju and company solve is not the right one.
It's too simple.
It's too simple because color charge along that hyperbola.
Yeah.
But what?
If you assume it's the same, you get what they get. Okay, then.
One can still ask the question. Suppose I'm looking at rapidity zero here, and there is some rapidity, maximal rapidity here. How much do I have to go from zero to see the color to be incorrelated with the color at eta equals zero? Do you say it's of order one, or
yeah,
it's out of eta zero?
The rapidity is complete randomness along on the side, because that's the typical range over which you radiate off. The harder guy radiates a unit of rapidity below, that guy radiates so on all the way down to.
But they do with
the. No,
but that's the charge that you're embedded in that part. Those quanta sitting at rapidity 2 units to the right have been generated by entirely different charges than the one in the middle. So those are randomly disconnected. There has to be a.
If I concentrate on mid rapidity, sitting mid rapidity, so observing things happening mid rapidity.
The only thing that's carrying is whether the equation of motion, I mean, if you assume that there is a randomness of charge along the line, then you cannot use the 2 plus 1 dimensional equation of motion assuming line charges.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different model. That's a different.
Yeah, it's not what you're doing. It's not what you. It's not
that's
your,
not what he's doing, because he's allowing the randomness to develop.
Right.
So he's breaking that assumption that you have always perfect correlation along that rapidity.
But he's also allowing randomness to develop as a time, as a function of time.
Yeah.
I want to.
That's not in the classical equation. I just simply cannot, doesn't tolerate it.
I want to ask him how he makes predictions for Rick, since it's been mentioned several times that you have a paper in which you make predictions for Rick. So
is that prediction or is it
post-diction? How do you make post-dictions for Rick?
Basically,
goes into that.
Basically, the change compared to the change in the final multiplicity. During the production, well, in this picture there is a change in the total number of particles as you go from here to here.
Mm-hmm.
This change is of order 1 over alpha 2 phi.
Question, how much of this can we now take with us when QS is not anymore so much larger than lambda QCD?
That's much larger.
That's what I'm answering.
Yes, so much larger. Then alpha is about a 1. You can worry all this power here, which is especially not very big. The 0.4. Can it change anything? And one thing one can look at is what is the this. If I change the centrality, then alpha will slightly change. The QS scale depends on the centrality.
Log. It depends on log.
On what? On log.
Log scale.
Yeah.
One change.
Yeah, alpha is a log of Q, so it's still. One can compute the total number of charged particles and divide it by the number of participants.
Can I ask about that? Because you started the paper with a chain that's saying that Dima, who's done this exercise you just talked about, fit the data with the 1 over alpha.
Uh-huh.
Log.
Uh-huh.
But you said that, and you criticized that calculation, saying that the constants that Dima used have now been upgraded to different constants. You know, so somehow no constants have ever appeared up until now. Now we get back to reality in terms of
in terms of the fixing the
so
constant.
So we already had one set of calculation. The Berger of Levin have fit everything nicely with a scheme. And then you start the paper saying, well, but that scheme is off because the factor really should be 1/3 as many gluons. And then you're going to multiply the total number of gluons by 3 due to this final evolution.
Or 2, and something.
And end up at exactly the same point. You know, modulo this alpha to the 2/5, which is...
Which is depending,
So what is this change by 1/3?
Yeah, that's what my question is. So I'll go back to the line 1. So when we turn the cartoon into an actual number of 300 gluons per unit rapidity from...
So there is a constant here.
This liberation constant, right, somehow does. So you take Raju's liberation constant, which has changed by a factor of 3.
For pi and c squared.
Can I just, that constant, by the way, is the virtual gluons to real gluons constant, right?
You see here, it's a parameter. It's some parameter.
No, it's some fraction of the initial x gluon.
It's the gluons
coming down the beam pipe is going to
It's
come
the
out.
Number of gluons to number of charged particles ratio.
That's a different number. I thought that was the second number, that 3.
There's another number.
this is number C here, right?
Oh, there's two numbers.
This is a number that determines for a given number, for a given QS, how many gluons you have in the initial. In the initial state,
right, that used to be 2 log 2 or something.
Sorry, just to be clear, it's not in the initial state, right? It's really not in the original nucleus. It's really on
after
shell gluons.
Right, after
gluons.
So,
the number here.
One as compared to the number of gluons in the wave function.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's the number here. It's the number that depends on the C. Because there's not much evolving here, so it's presumably a well-defined concept, at least. Well, you can worry whether it's a well-defined concept with the number of particles continuously change during the time. So you cannot tell. It will depend sensitively on the time at which you compute this number of initial particles. But because there is a long enough time interval when the number of particles doesn't change, so it's presumably a well-defined concept. See here.
And that changed by a factor of 3 relative to a previous Krasnitz Venom-Gopalan calculation. That, I mean, this C changed by a factor of 3, right? That was your first observation in the.
Who changed that?
You have a thank you note to Raju for changing by a factor of 3, the 2 log 2 and 2.
Becomes 0.5?
Yeah. So that was the first big change. So you get much less gluon than Dima estimated, right?
There is,
and therefore
slightly
you have
less
for growth due to multiplication.
Yeah.
So where did this first change come from?
There is the change of the number of C in the number C that. Okay. So this number C was somewhat bigger than 1.
Yes.
1.2 something.
What associated with these numbers is QS is totally unknown.
This QS is also unknown. So I'm a little bit worried about that.
But what
camera there?
Yeah, it's
saying something.
He's
something about.
But what physics change?
I think it's the numerics change. I don't.
So it's just a change from their numerics.
I have no idea how one defines that in practice. It is a well defined concept, the number of gluons that have
this
a
is,
wave
yes,
function.
This,
but
this is well defined.
How do you measure that? What operation is? What do you?
He's saying
this is well defined.
This is
well defined when
alpha
is less than 1.
And you find out how many are there at the end of the day. So, is this now? I mean, the thing that sort of surprised me, and I wish Raju could talk from the from the other side. This factor of three, is that now final? Is that now believed? Or is this now, you know, in progress? Because suppose that C turned out to be two instead of a third tomorrow, you know, or improved calculation. Would that disprove your model for your calculation for Rick at least? Because it gets you too many gluons, and therefore you have to back
up. Come on. Kao is right. Nothing can disprove this for Rick because you can mess with QS. Yeah.
Just QS square, yeah.
No, but I mean, Dima actually had in a nice little equation for QS squared, R squared, you know, times some constants is equal to X blue, and then you think you know what X blue is, and you plug that in, and you can solve things.
We have a factor of two different in the in this equation, so.
There's another factor of two, but Dima says that's not true. But I mean, just the first third, this, I mean, many factors. I want to just trace this down to the end, because if you would not have put a picture in there for Rick, I would be happy, you know, this is fine, this is good. But you end up producing exactly the same curve as Dima with
slightly different,
10 because different of numbers in between that went up and down by factors of three, and finally the product of everything turned out to be one, you know, by fixing it to the data.
Yeah.
So it's...
It's not the fitting of the data that is the goal of that paper. We want to say that there is a range of parameters where you can change the number of initial final gluon compared to initial gluon by factor bigger than two that is still consistent with the what we know from lattice simulation.
From lattice simulation?
Yeah, from the
sorry.
Crassis Venugopalan.
That number C was guessed at by Mueller first, right?
Right.
To be about one, and then I thought Kopchikov got 1.2 or something.
Right.
Too long.
Well, Mueller
then did it on the lattice and got 0.3. That's what I understood. Mm-hmm. And isn't that 0.3 on the lattice pretty reasonable? I mean, isn't that? I don't know how to make it.
I know that at the very beginning, even on the lattice, they reported something about one.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Dima used 1.2, because it agreed with all previous versions of the Venugopalan and Brezhnev's calculations, which are not quoted, by the way, in this paper. I was quite amazed, and I was trying to trace down this factor of three. You quote, which you thank Raju, but you don't quote the papers where they had the 1.3 and where the error is described. I tried desperately to search through the papers to find out where this factor of three change occurred historically, and it would be nice to do that. Because,
well, presumably it hasn't been published yet, but if these guys thank Roger for private communication, that hasn't been published.
Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah, but this paper also criticizes Dima for using the wrong factors and fitting the data, so then one has to back it up.
No.
Is it possible to use the Rutschel-Krasnitz simulation at all if they are using completely different initial conditions than you have in your picture as far as the longitudinal PZ goes?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
That's a good question. Let me think. Yeah, let me think. Let me think. As far as the... No, as far as the number of total particles, well, the two picture differ by the presence of PZ.
Should be hiding in the office, letting this and the wife to be prepared for the wedding.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said.
But in one picture, there is no field. All the field configurations are boost invariant. And in this picture, there is a PZ in the, there is, particle has a PZ.
Initially.
Yes, initially. Not sure if, it could be still reasonable to use that calculation to compute the total number of particles, that is the, or even the PPERP distribution.
I still want to understand. So Raju and company changed that 1.2 to a 0.3. let's give it to them. Fine, they found a bug in their calculation, it's fixed now. So then what do you say? I mean, that's not your point.
What is
how do you
the point?
How do you make up for the missing muons? So that was the question. How do you get a factor of 3 rather than 4 or 5?
In principle, in that,
I'd like to be able to understand what the number is, right?
No, let me ask
yeah.
on this. What piece of the data are you trying to fit? Are you trying to fit the multiplicity?
The total multiplicity.
Total multiplicity, or how the total multiplicity changes with the impact parameter, or what?
Well, the change with the impact parameter is almost indistinguishable from Dimas.
Because just because he has 1 over alpha and you have 1 over alpha to the
yes, and alpha
power.
Is just logarithmically
dependent
on.
I trusted the normalization in Dimas' paper, and I doubt that Dimas trusted the normalization. I think it's true that just to feed the data, essentially.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if all you're doing is in Dimas' paper, and now we can. Dimas listening. In Dimas' paper, there's a fudge factor, which is the overall normalization, which is chosen to fit the data. And then Dimas' point was, once you fit the multiplicity at 1 impact parameter, let's see how it changes with impact parameter.
How fast?
And that was his main point. Mm-hmm. And at that level, you're just changing the fudge factor, so who cares?
It's even more, one assumes that the gluon distribution function is a log. It's a definite assumption for the gluon distribution function.
XXG, right? XG.
Well, it's pretty reasonable.
I agree. This you can change
one,
any.
One over, you're changing 1 over alpha s to something like 1 over alpha s.
7/5.
To 7/5. You're adding an alpha to the 2/5.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the point is one over alpha. Yeah.
Well, what is in the prediction? Once you fixed all the parameters, what is the ET per particle, charged particle? So let's go one step further. I mean, there's infinite more data that these poor experimentalists who have now dissolved. No, sorry, here. Still here. John has evaporated. There are a lot of data. So beyond DND data, which we have a lot of uncertain parameters you can fix, what is ET per charged particle?
ET is harder because it depends on the freeze-out process. We don't observe the number of particles during the one stage.
Well, most of the lost in the beginning, the longitudinal gradients.
But it also lost during the hydrodynamic. It's also lost during the hydrodynamic expansion.
And not transverse. It only loses by longitudinal. The transverse is fixed.
No. But the
but that's weak. The amount of stuff that you lose is small. Most of it is lost from the beginning when the gradients are larger.
Why?
You can look at any of the because you need the gradients in order to get the pressure to work. And so if you just look at the equations of motion, where is the ET as a function of time, you have a very rapid drop in the beginning and a very slow toward the end over a long period of time.
Well, once you thermalize, it's this is 1/tau to 1/3. Decrease if you have hydrodynamic during.
So either then, since you start late in your thermalization, then you have to end very late. You can make up. I agree. You can make up the. You can lose enough energy if you're willing to go that long. And then the next question is, how about HPT? Okay, so we know everything now about the longitudinal and radii, the transverse radii. So if you have a dynamics with an enormously late freeze out in order to be compatible with the ET, how about the HPT?
Well, you want the hydrodynamics to start very soon. That's what you mean.
Yeah. Right. So that's.
This is
the big question. If I abstract anything from all this, it's that a whole lot of stuff has to happen before you get thermalized. And I then go listen to a talk by Ulrich, and he says to explain the V2, you need hydro to start working at a time of 0.6 fermions. I understand that we can't take numbers too seriously from estimates of things like alpha to the 2/5 in them, but just in terms of an ordering of events, I mean, doesn't it? Don't those seem in conflict?
They are in conflict.
Yeah.
Unless, yeah.
It's only after 2.5 Fermis, you will not get the lead.
Well, you said you have to start with hydrodynamics at 0.6, right?
Yeah.
And this is, this is still,
assuming
that you have this incoherence to get his stages, he has to have this, this incoherence, which in the Roger Krasnitz description is not there. So, I mean, there are several different problems. I mean, either you throw out completely the classical colored glass picture. But if you have the thing that coming back to the original point that was bothering me is there's a lot of coherence in that picture, right? Because the classical fields, just what we were talking about before, which are very ordered, you only have this Gaussian average over color charge sources, but there's a lot of coherence in the classical field. In this description, you have some randomness or incoherence, which is not in their picture. And you need that before you can even start to talk about the sequence of events which lead to thermalization. So there's even another question, which is how do you get from their coherence to this incoherence?
I think
I don't think their coherence was reasonable in the first place.
Okay, well, you just toss it out. They're not here to defend themselves.
The burden of proof here as a concrete, constructive criticism is to actually find observables.
Yeah.
Maybe it's open charm production or, dileptons that would be sensitive to this flow, this period of time.
Yeah.
And to see the systematics of the rate of change with multiplicity or whatever that influences the QSAT, so that one could see in the relative changes of stuff that is produced early, whether there's free streaming period that lasts for alpha to the 3/2 or whatever, or versus 1/alpha, in principle at least, to map out those observables, which eventually will be measured. That can actually get a handle on this, because it seems like at the end of the day, I mean, this DMDA, I know there's a continuum of infinity of models that will fit that, and that's only a bulk constraint, but what's the guts of this kind of an analysis is a very specific time scale that must be changing qualitatively at least, and quantitatively the early probes.
Well, but also
the early probes,
me too. I mean, if describe it this way, I would say that at a qualitative level, this thermalization picture predicts quite small V2.
Yeah, that's what one would guess. But on the other hand, you could suppose you
quite small. How small?
The combination V2 within this approach is
still.
I don't think they would be able to do it because
you have to have equation of state
distributions, space-time dependence of QS, and so on.
What
they can do is they can look at the ET per particle as a function of collision energy of root S.
But that is QS at the beginning. But the ET you measure is the ET is sensitive to the freeze out. So it's not that it isn't sensitive to the early time.
Thermalization. Once you postulate freeze out at say a critical energy density, you can always calculate the hydrodynamic loss of ET from this last stage just by doing hydrodynamics. All the complicated stuff is before that.
What I meant is
if hydro doesn't set in, hydro doesn't begin till alpha to the minus 5/2 or whatever. And if we take that to mean a few Fermi, then the hydro won't generate any V2 for you, because if you start hydro at a few Fermi, it won't make any V2.
Right.
Something is wrong, and it seems to me that there has to be there's something missing in this picture of thermalization. There's some way of thermalization which is not being taken into account, which is allowing the system to thermalize much faster than what Sanda said.
Let me answer that. Of course, I can always, if I do a Boltzmann type simulation, I can always put a large K factor and then solve your problem. But It doesn't. It isn't the answer you are looking for. Right? If you were just change the cross section compared to leading order perturbation theory by a k factor and then fit the k factor so that it produce a compress everything.
Compress everything back. Yeah. All of this story back into plus six Fermis.
Yes, but in principle it can be done if the k factor is weak enough. But that would make anyone happy. But the
Can I just ask a question to this whole crowd, because I might have missed something, but my understanding is that you could actually get some V2 from a non-hydrodynamic system if the stress energy tensor wasn't...
You're thinking of the Raju and
Yes.
You have to look at the published version of their paper when the V2 that they get from their classical fields turns out to be totally unlike what's seen in the data. As of last June, when I heard Raju talk last June, he was very excited because he was getting a V2 which looked roughly like the data. It's totally changed since then.
It wasn't a mistake in the code. It was the two-dimensionality which caused a huge V2. The logarithmic ranges of interactions.
According to Alex in his talk here, the mistake that they made was neglecting to impose color neutrality.
And so
different from what Roger told me just a few weeks ago, but okay.
Yeah. The V2 is completely wrong, or it's just
small.
But is there a problem with that? Because that means that Ulrich can start later.
This is a question. I've asked Ulrich before, so let's.
No, I mean, if you, the statement is if you start later than about one Fermi,
but suppose
dynamics.
But suppose I start you off with it, start your hydro with a V2 already present, a small,
50%.
50, well, or 20%, yeah. Your 0.6 Fermi,
essentially, the statement is that the V2 at the starting time, where I start my hydro, must be the same V2 that I would have gotten if I had started the hydro.
For example, the highest
because we started to dilute.
So you start, if you start at 10.6 Fermi with no V2, then you get it all.
I can start at 3 Fermis, but then I must put in the V2 at this point, as I would have gotten it from a hydrodynamic calculation.
So at what time is your V2 half of its final value?
About 3 Fermis over C.
Okay. So if we were to start off hydro at 3 Fermis, but with a pre-existing pre-hydro V2, which was half the final value, everything would be okay.
Yes. But then the statement is still that this V2 is the same V2 that you would have gotten from a hydro. And you first have to show me that it's possible to get this with non-hydro, I mean non-ideal evolution at all.
And they haven't shown that.
Nobody has shown
that. Even if this paper is... Well, I guess it's right now, but you just told me it was about, 30% of...
First of all, it's small, and second of all, it's the PT dependence.
It's wrong. On 1 GeV.
It's completely wrong.
All the V2s, it's at low PT.
Yeah. Very low PT.
And I have a suspicion that what they see is the anisotropy, the quantum mechanical anisotropy of the initial condition fully analyzed. Which gives you a VT at very small transpose. On the scale of the inverse size of the original overlap region.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay, completely different. This is to maybe everybody, but particularly to Dan. One of the things that I don't understand is everything you calculate here really has to do with gluons, right?
Yes.
And now, what makes anybody think that has anything to do with the final number of particles and that transition? And I can understand you could change normalization, but that number is independent of energy and impact parameter. Is
the,
there some principle?
What number? No. If there is a thermalization, if there is thermalization between. If there is a thermalized gluon gas, you can translate it into pion just using conservation of entropy because everything is thermalized, entropy cannot increase further. If the system doesn't go through a thermalized gluon state, then the transition from gluon to pion is completely uncontrolled.
Yeah.
Well, let's thank Sean before we get
Last question. Why do you